So again, here's the challenge, here's the dare. Some of you guys are very creative. Is there a way that we could display these stones somehow, somewhere in the church? And that if someone new comes in and says, what's with all the rocks on the wall? That we could say, those are stones of remembrance, places where God showed up. We get to tell our story. Do you have a stone up there? Yeah, I do. Here's mine right here. This is what this means. So I'm just kind of putting that out there. You guys do with it what you want. If you don't do anything, I'm probably going to figure something out. But I wanted to put this before you because some of you are very creative and you'll have something like together before the end of the day. So that's what I would like to see as our story continues to propel. Because what we said is if we're going to be whole, if we're going to experience wholeness, if the brokenness inside of us and part of our lives are to be put back together, we have to remember well. We need to be in touch and in contact with the story of what God has been doing, marking out times of our lives when he showed up and did something extraordinary. Here's the struggle, and maybe you're already experiencing this as we walk through this series, that none of the things that we are talking about are easily fixed with a snap of a finger, right? I mean, you've probably experienced this where you thought you were past something and then something came into your life or you responded away and you went, man, I thought I was past that deal. Or if you were praying for patience and it didn't happen quick enough and then you got mad because you didn't have enough patience, right? Anybody felt that way? Yeah, it's kind of backwards and upside down, but that's kind of the human experience, right? Or you thought you were past and over being angry, and then somebody did something to you, and instead of taking that on yourself, well, it's really their fault because they made me angry. Anybody ever had that excuse, right? It's not my fault. It's clearly a them problem. It's not me. I think we do this all the time, that we feel like, because the world that we live in is an instant gratification world. It is right now, and when as we live life, and especially if you're trying to live a life that's connected to Christ, this can be frustrating because this is not an instantaneous process. This is a lifelong struggle. This is a lifelong journey. I think that's why when we call them these little quests, a quest is not something that's short and immediate. It takes time. I think that's an appropriate word for us as we continue this quest for nobility. And something else I think is important for us to note. Even in the midst of acknowledging, okay, God is doing something, God never shortchanges the experiment or the experience and gives us a shortcut to the end. He never does that. Because I think that God knows that there is value in the journey. Just think about that statement of that God never changes the experience. And you think over your life, where has God ever shown up and instantly done something? It's usually a long process, isn't it? So I want to encourage you as we continue to, as we move through more of this series, and this is going to take us right up to the beginning of Christmas to get through this entire Uprising series. As God is speaking to you and kind of turning some things over in your soul, understand that that's part of the process, and it is not a quick fix. It is not an immediate deal. It is a lifetime experience. So as we move from gratitude into wholeness, the thing that should come out of our lives, the thing that should bloom, is a great sense of generosity. That we become generous people. When we acknowledge that God has shown up and we are experiencing wholeness, there should be this overwhelming generosity that starts to come forward. It's kind of hard at times. I'll just admit this right up front. It's hard to talk about generosity when you know, sitting there, we're going to take an offering later. Let's just admit that little bit of uncomfortableness, okay? So for me to stand up here and say, it is good for you to be generous, here comes the plate, start writing, pull it out, whatever you got to do to be generous, show me how generous you are. That's an uncomfortable conversation, isn't it? So I'm just going to, if you would with me for a minute, set that aside, that whole maybe uncomfortableness and you're waiting for the bottom line, all right, what's he going to ask me to do? We're going to get to that, but set that aside for a minute. I think when we're in this quest for nobility, we acknowledge that it is good to be grateful, to be aware that God's activity is all around us, not just in our lives, not even just in the lives of our family, but all over the place, and be grateful for that. So we would admit that right up front. Yes, I should be more grateful. I think we also, when we talk about how the world is broken, that we can admit, I'm broken. And I need some wholeness. But when we get to generosity, there is this uncomfortable feeling that kind of overwhelms us. I think language is important. And one of the things that we say here that we probably don't say it often enough or well enough. When it comes time for offering, we try not to say we're going to take an offering. Because I don't want my money taken. Do you want your money taken? Probably not. I'll just assume your silence is yes. I don't want my money taken. So what we talk about is that we are going to receive an offering. You have the opportunity, the privilege of giving into what God is doing. I don't want anyone to come to this church or any church and simply say, they're after my money. And that's why I don't go to church. Now, I've heard that statement. You've probably heard that. Maybe you've made that statement at one point in your life. I don't want there to be ever a feeling of they are after my money, and that's why I don't participate in church. This is a tricky issue for sure. However, if you and I are going to experience a grateful heart and we're going to live grateful lives, if we are going to have wholeness a part of us, if we do not deal with this issue of generosity and greed, this struggle, this tension that exists, we will never live whole lives. It will be a frustrating experience to try and be grateful for everything that we have if we don't deal with and we don't wrestle with this issue of generosity and greed. Here's the deal with generosity. Here's the punchline. God does not need you to be generous as much as he needs you to understand that you need to be generous. So there's a difference there. God saying, all right, do this. And that's kind of how sometimes we see issues of generosity. I think what God is saying is, you need to wrestle with this. You need to land this for your sake, for your own health, for your own well-being. You need to be generous because it is good for you. It is not just something that benefits others. It's not just something that pours into God's kingdom. It is helpful for you to be generous. So with all of that said, we're going to go to Ephesians chapter 4. And here's an uncomfortable statement as well. And this might get me in trouble with some of our leaders. If you're here this morning, or you're talking to someone about generosity and you're framing it in the context of the church, here's what I would say. If you don't trust this church, if you don't trust me, if you don't trust the leadership, don't use that as an excuse to not be generous. There are loads of philanthropic organizations that do a wonderful, beautiful job of delivering on the promises that they're making. I'll give you a quick example. The group that I went to Haiti with just last month, Convoy of Hope, and you can get the financials on almost any nonprofit 501c3 that's doing philanthropic work. You can understand what their overhead costs are and how much of your money would actually go to the places they're helping. One example, Convoy of Hope. Less than 10% of their total income, what they receive in giving, less than 10% goes to their overhead administrative cost. Less than 10%. That is on par with the very best organizations throughout the world. So if you're sitting here and you think, I don't necessarily want to give to a church, don't use that as an excuse to be greedy. Give somewhere else. Give to Convoy of Hope. They are feeding people throughout the world, and they are doing an unbelievable job, a better job than anybody else in the world at feeding those who are in need. So don't use your, I don't like them, I got burned by church, I don't trust pastors. Don't use that as an excuse to be greedy and not give. So let's look at what Paul says. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28. This is where we're going to spend all of our time, mostly this morning, is in this one verse. And I'll just tell you, we're going to be really slow in this. We're going to break down what Paul is saying here. We're going to get down to the crumbs of it. Verse 28, he who has been stealing must steal no longer. Just pause right there. If you're stealing, this is what Paul is saying, if you're stealing, stop it. Quit it. Just don't do it anymore. If you're doing this thing that is wrong, stop doing that thing that's wrong. In my household, my wife and I have different tastes about what we like, in particular related to furniture. I like old stuff, antiques in particular. I love going antique shopping. When we were first together, and in particular first married, you know, because when you're dating, you're like, all right, I will put up with a lot for her or him. When you get married, Some of that changes. The laughter betrays the truth in that. So when we got married, Jen said, I don't like antiquing. I don't like going to antiques. It smells bad in there. It's true. It's dusty. Also true. It's musty and kind of gross, and I don't want to do it. And I finally just stopped arguing and said, oh, you're going to find something. It's not true. She's not going to find anything there, ever. It's never going to happen. My parents, who are also, my mom in particular loves antiquing. They live down in Oklahoma. They took part of their vacation to go on the world's longest yard sale. I don't know if you're aware of this. It stretches from states throughout the South. And it was great. They took a trailer. I was a little bit envious. And Jen was saying, they can have it. I don't want anything to do with that. That sounds awful. Why would anyone choose to take days off and do that? So we have some different tastes in our household. I like old stuff. Jen likes new stuff. Now, when I say new stuff, Jen likes expensive stuff. And she is willing to admit this. She's laughing because she knows this is true. And I'm not just talking a little bit out of our price range. Galaxies out of our price range. It's not even close. Now, the other thing about Jen is that she is very careful as well with money. And say, that's ridiculous. I would never pay that much. But that's really nice. And I said, I'm glad to hear you say that you would never want to pay that much, because we're not paying that much. I don't care if it has gold bars inside, maybe. But probably not even then. So there is a joke when I am gone that she, every now and then, she'll be like, you have too much stuff. So if you come back and stuff, like if I'm gone to a conference or just away overnight, she's like, I'm going to start selling some of your stuff. I'm going to start selling. So we have to have a conversation that if you are giving stuff that is not yours, that's not generosity. That is stealing. And Jesus is against that. Really, really important. True generosity is not taking what someone else has and giving it away. I did you a favor. No, you took what was mine and you gave it away. That is not generosity. True generosity, though, when it shows up, when it happens, is a truly beautiful thing. But the truth is that there is potential to take what is not ours, not just possessions, not just money. Sometimes we steal other people's hearts, steal their integrity, steal their emotions. And so what Paul is saying here, it's easy to say stealing money, possessions. But I think something underneath the surface is there. We need to be sure that we're not stealing emotions, integrity from people. So what Paul is saying is, if you're stealing, stop. Quit it. And then he goes on, he who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work. So the solution is really simple, right? If you're stealing, stop it. What am I supposed to do? Work. That's what you're supposed to do. Stop stealing and move into work. Now, here is the issue, and I have to be careful about this, because I'm going to reveal a little bit of my own brokenness. I struggle with those folks who say, I can't find a job anywhere. You may not be able to find a career that you're going to do the rest of your life. You may not be able to find a job, but there is always work available. I find that, and I got to be careful even in how I say that, because I don't want to come off as better than. I don't want to pretend that I have things figured out and if you just apply to yourself. But there is a principle that exists in work. Those who have a high value on work are always able to find something to do. Always. So he says, stop stealing and work. Then look, he goes on. He who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work. Do something useful with your own hands. Something that provides a small service. I have some of the people in our society that are some of the least appreciated, most easily overlooked, are people who work in service industry. Wait staff in particular, waiters and waitresses. And I have a real soft spot for people who work in that area, in particular college kids, because college kids don't, by and large, have a lot of money. They're working as hard as they can. I have a soft spot because that's one of the jobs that Jenny did when we were in school. And knowing that what she brought home was a big portion of what helped us pay bills when we were early married. So I have a real soft spot for those that are in that particular industry. And Jenny put it really well. This was years and years ago. She said, you know, people do not like you messing with their food or with their money. And in the wait staff, if you're on staff waiting tables, you're kind of messing with both of those things. I don't like this, and you're going to make me pay for it? How's that work again? right? I mean, that's kind of how we get kind of indignant about things. And so it's very easy to treat those in those professions with very little respect. I was at Central Michigan University on Thursday night. They had asked me to speak at Campus Crusade for Life. And there was a young woman there, somebody that I've become friends with that I know. She's actually going to be getting married to a kid I had in youth a long time ago. And so just talking with her, she works at, but by the way, at Crew, they don't start until 9 o'clock at night. That is a real problem for me. I mean, this is part of the realization of getting older. At 9 o'clock, I'm looking at the clock going, do I want to finish watching this show or do I want to go to bed? And they don't even start until 9. I didn't start my way home until 10:30 on Thursday night. They always go out to Buffalo Wild Wings afterwards, a big crew of these kids. I did that once. I didn't start my way home until 12:30 Friday morning. Needless to say, that Friday was a wreck. So I'm at Crew this past Thursday and talking with this young lady. She works at Bennigan's in Mount Pleasant. And we were just kind of talking off the cuff, and I don't even know what brought this up, but she said, you know what is the hardest day of the week to be a waitress? Sundays. And she said, it's because of some church folks. It's not everybody. But church folks in general, we have done a real good job of crafting this reputation that we are not very generous. We need to make sure that at every opportunity, we are fighting against that stereotype. So that's why I am a massive over-tipper. Because that's an opportunity for me to wreck that stereotype and say, not everyone that knows Jesus is stingy, is greedy, is small. That's part, and Jen and I even argue about this, you're paying too much. Really? Because we used to be in this very situation. And I want to make sure that people who are doing something to benefit someone else understand that they are being appreciated, that it matters what they're doing. He who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work. Do something with something useful with his hands, that he may have something to share with those in need. So this message, this thing that Paul is talking about, is not just stop stealing. It's not just go to work. It's not even just do something useful. But to do all of those things, to stop stealing, to start working, to do something useful with your hands so that you can give back to someone else. That you can do something useful with your existence. That you're not just working and living for you. Do something useful and share with those that are in need. Here's the thing that maybe you've never even thought about. God is not just after us stopping the things that are sinful. Stop doing the things that pull us away from Him. He doesn't just have this list that says, you need to stop doing these things. The reason God asks us to stop doing those things is so that we can become the people that God has created us to be. So there's a stopping in this case, stop stealing, start doing some work, do something useful with your hands, not just for those things, but so that you can pour into the life of someone else to help those that are in need. See, this is a passage really about generosity. Because God wants to unleash our hearts that we would become overwhelmingly generous. We have an interesting situation going on with our church right now. And some of you might be aware of this and some of you might not be. There is a woman that met me in the parking lot, I think it might have been earlier, maybe Monday or Tuesday this week. Turns out she is homeless. In need of a place to stay. And she said to me, I have some housing that's kind of coming together, but it's taking some time. She said, I'm wondering, and she kind of pauses and looks intently at me, if I can pitch my tent in back of your church. And there's a little voice inside of me that starts to say, don't do it. Because she may never leave. Now, there is some truth in that, because I have seen that happen. But there was another voice that started kind of coming to the surface, and it really reflects this verse. We have the opportunity to do something for someone that is in great need. And as I talk to her and a couple other people have learned her story, she is a lifetime almost homeless person. She's been out to California, San Francisco, and places in Southern California. She's been in Colorado. So certainly there are some choices that are being made, no question. But is God inviting us to a place where we get the chance to be generous in that kind of instance? Is there an opportunity to do something for those that are in need? It's kind of interesting. Michelle Van Horn has really taken on, because I tried to share as much as I could with our elders and kind of tell them, here's what's going on and here's what's taking place. And Michelle has really taken, I'm going to brag on you for a minute, because Michelle has been moved by what's going on with this lady and has wanted somehow to reach out to her and provide in some little ways how she can. And I saw this story, Michelle had posted this on, I think it was on Facebook yesterday, that she and Brandon were going around and picking up some, getting some food and also getting a warmer jacket and those kind of things for her. And if I'm getting this wrong, she will correct me later. She opened up her wallet and said to Brandon kind of out loud, "This is our rainy day money," which is money for yard sales and just fun stuff. It isn't budgeted for. But she said, "This is our rainy day fund, but I think we need to spend this on her." Sherry is her name. And Brandon, I wish he was here this morning. Is it? Oh, well, that's all right. Brandon said, he kind of paused. This is a great deal of maturity for a 16, 17-year-old kid. He kind of looked up at the sky and he said, "Well, I think it's going to rain anyways." Yeah. It would have been so easy for him or any of the rest of us in that moment to say, "Mom, what are you doing? That's our money. That's our like fun money. That's movie money. That's going and doing something that we haven't budgeted for." A simple opportunity, a little crack to be generous, and he steps right into that. In part because of what he's seen from his own mother. You see, God is continually putting in front of us opportunities to be generous. And so many times, the easy thing to say is, "No, I don't have the time, I don't have the resources, I don't want to." God is continually putting before us opportunities to be generous. See, it is difficult for me to understand anyone who says, "I am following Jesus," and yet hiding behind the title of frugality under the guise of really greed, and simply saying, "I'm not participating in that." It's hard for me to understand. And maybe that is the spot that you are wrestling most with this morning, is that very struggle of, I'm a careful saver. I am frugal, I have no trouble with saving whatsoever. I think saving is really important. We try and save as much money as we can for taxes and retirement and all of the rest. But there are moments in your life and in mine when we have the opportunity to become more generous than we were yesterday. And I want to encourage you to step into that and say, "Yes, I will do that." There's one more story I want to take you to. This is Luke chapter 19. And this is a story that you're probably familiar with. You probably remember this from being a kid. If you grew up in church, certainly you heard this story before. Luke chapter 19, this is a story of Zacchaeus. Luke 19, verse 1. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. Just to pause here for a moment. Let's remember our context. First century, Middle Eastern, Jewish existence. Tax collectors were often Jewish men, but they worked for the Roman government, which had them under oppression. And the Roman government said very simply, "This is the bare minimum. This is what you've got to turn in each quarter or each year," or whatever their collection system was. "This is how much money we need from you based on how many people you're in charge of and taking taxes from. Whatever you bring in above that is yours to keep." And what began to happen very quickly, because let's be real honest. We have a tendency to be greedy. And when there is some, maybe there is always more to be had. And so that's what began to happen. The tax collectors would begin to take more and more and figure out how much they could get out of a given household or a business owner that they could keep for themselves. This passage says that he was wealthy. Scholarship, those that are in scholarship and kind of study some of the background information say that Zacchaeus was not only wealthy, but he was crooked as can be. He was hated. He was a pariah among his own people. Verse 3. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must go to your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Now look at the response from the people around. Verse 7. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." A little bit of judgmental attitude and behavior there, isn't there? How dare he? A good Jew would never be seen with a tax collector. A rabbi, which is what Jesus was, absolutely off limits. So the muttering and the complaining, this rabbi, he's no rabbi. He wouldn't dare be caught in this setting with this man. And then verse 8, I think there's some time that passes here, and after Jesus has sat and been with Zacchaeus, verse 8, Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Now, Jesus' response is curious as well. Jesus says to him, "Today salvation has come to this house because this man, too, is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save that which was lost." Isn't it interesting that in Zacchaeus' interaction, his first contact with Jesus, there is this generosity that wells up inside of him? And he says, I have taken from people. I have taken what is not mine. I have stolen what did not belong to me. So not only am I going to return that, I am going to go above and beyond four times whatever I took. So there we get a peek into Zacchaeus' immense wealth, that he could pay back four times what he had taken from people that was not his. His first interaction with Jesus, there is the spirit of generosity that grows and breaks apart his greed. You know, Zacchaeus being a tax collector and being very shrewd and very greedy, he probably had this even heart mindset that said, "I got to go down to this house and I wonder how much I can shake them down for. And I got to go over to this business." And he's probably always thinking about money and how much he can get. And yet his interaction with Jesus causes all of his greed and his hard heart to break apart and for something significant to happen. I kind of wonder if maybe this is part of our issue. That if we are sitting here this morning, we're wrestling with what it means to be generous. And that there's this internal fight going on inside of us. If part of the problem is we have not allowed Jesus to come very close to us. We have kept him at bay in regards to our generosity. At an arm's reach. Stay away. I don't think I'm ready for all of that. And so your heart has remained kind of hard and calloused. The truth about generosity and life is this. You and I will never become the kind of people that God has in mind for us until we wrestle with this issue of generosity and greed. It will never happen for us. We will never experience true wholeness. We will never live grateful lives if we do not get down to the nitty-gritty of what it means to be generous and whether or not we're actually doing that. We'll never be whole. We'll never be grateful. Never live or feel like we are living a fulfilled and satisfied life. If you are bound by greed, if I am owned by things and bottom lines, we will miss out on this soul revolution that we've been talking about these weeks. But when you are generous, what you own doesn't own you. And what you have doesn't have you. That's if you and I are generous. So probably this comes back to the bottom line. And maybe some of you are wrestling with this. What do I have to give? What's the number? Tell me what the number is, and I'll look at that. I'll consider it. 10% is what the Bible talks about as a tithe. Now, whether you take that off of your net or your gross earnings, that's really between you and God. But 10% is where the Bible starts. And it was kind of funny. I heard a conversation, a pastor, he was telling the story of a conversation he's having with one of the people that's considering joining his church. And the guy was asking him, all right, just tell me what it is. What are you going to make me give if I am a part of your church? And the pastor responded, well, 10% is biblical. That's where we start. But he said, we're never going to call you and ask you whether or not you're giving, and we're not going to look at financial records in that terms and make sure that you're giving your 10%. And the guy kind of went, whew, thought you were going to make me tithe. And the pastor just kind of took a pause and he said, well, 10% is where it starts, but we would never limit you to 10%. If you want to give more than that, you are more than welcome to give more than 10%. See, this is what generosity does. Generosity does not look at here. What is the bare minimum? Generosity says, where is the starting point? Because I want to go from there and I want to do something more. Generosity never says, here's the cap, here's the limit, here is the top shelf. Generosity simply says, if I have something and God prompts me to give it away, I'm going to give it away. Because the Bible is also filled with all kinds of principles of what generosity really looks like as well. That when you give away, God rolls things back into your lives. Now, this is not a prosperity gospel at all. This simply says, because prosperity gospel says, God wants you to be healthy, wealthy, and have all that you ever wanted. That is not biblical whatsoever. You will not find that anywhere in Scripture. What you will find is those who are generous and give of themselves, God takes care of. Now, when we talk about generosity, we often just talk about money. But it's not just about money. This generosity issue is about your time. It's about your talent. It is about giving your best in everything that you do. Some of us really struggle with that time issue because everything else is eaten up with things that we could do and that we do. We need to really wrestle with what it means to be generous. See, and maybe you're wondering if I start tithing, what does that go to? How does that translate into what happens here at this church? Tithing and what you give and what we collect on Sunday mornings, that goes dominantly to help meet our budget, to pay bills, salary, lights, all of those kind of things. But here is the struggle, and I've been very honest with you, and I don't think it benefits us at all to push this truth down and not admit it. We are struggling financially as a church. We are not making budget at all. But here is the thing that continues to show up, that when we have a need, God meets that one way or another. I don't know if you're aware of this, and maybe you were here the week that we talked about the one house that we own that was sold. Most of that money was taken and put into our outreach accounts for Supper Club and the kids' summer meals that we do. That money has not had, we do not use that money as a direct impact on our budget at all. So what I'm really driving at here is maybe for some of you, the money is the issue. And maybe you gave a while back and you were a good tither and for whatever reason, one or another, you stopped tithing. And maybe that's what God is speaking to you about. He's saying, hey, you need to pay attention to this because your finances have been off-center of what God is asking. Maybe for some of you, it's your time. That your time has not, you've not been generous with your time. Every time there's an opportunity for you to give or to show up or be a part of something, you kind of say, no, I'm not going to do that, and here's why. And maybe there's a good reason attached to it. I think it's important that when we come to this place, we are honest enough with ourselves to say, there are some things in me that God needs to rightly align. There are some things about the way in which I live, the person that I am becoming, that need to be corrected a little bit. There's nothing wrong in that. And yet, for some of us, there's shame attached to even admitting something like that. Like I said, this is an uncomfortable topic because for some of us, it draws us right into the realm of conviction, knowing that there are things about us that related to our money or our time that need to be changed. Maybe it's time to step up and realize some things need to be shifted and just how generous a people we are. See, again, generosity is not just about your money. It is about your time. Are you finding a way, a place, an opportunity to be generous? Because that really is what Paul is talking about in this passage that we've used this morning. He's talking about you and I living a life that pours into the life of someone else, that there is generosity that flows out of us. And again, I don't want to be too heavy-handed about this, but it is absolutely true that if you and I want to experience wholeness, if we want to experience a grateful heart, we need to deal with our generosity. So we're going to do what we normally do. We're going to close this service with some music, and we're going to spend a lengthy time singing and worshiping. We're going to close this time with just some quietness. And maybe it is an opportunity for you to recognize and you to make some commitment to this change of heart that you're experiencing. Now, and that here's the thing. I don't look at tithing records. I have nothing to do with that. I don't know what anybody gives, and that's the way I want it. Because giving is not about me. It is not about this church. It's about you and what is in your heart. And whether or not you have allowed your heart to be softened enough to say, my life is not just about me and the things that I do. It is about what God is prompting me and how he's asking me to live a life of great generosity. So yeah, maybe some of you need to deal with the tithing issue. Maybe you've never tithed at all and God is saying, hey, it's time for you to start. And if you want some coaching on that, if you want to talk about that, you can talk to me. You can talk to any of our elders. Maybe for you, you're recognizing the need to give better of your time. And maybe God is talking to you about something completely different, that you have not been generous in a specific relationship or with certain people. And God is saying, all of those things deal with generosity. So I'm going to pray. We're going to ask God to speak to us and to call us to draw closer to him. Heavenly Father, we have come through these last couple weeks and we've maybe realized that the peak of this quest for nobility lies in our generosity, our willingness to give our lives to others, to give ourselves away. And maybe, Father, we have become very, very convicted, very aware of what you are speaking to us about. It's something maybe that you have been poking us in the heart and tapping us on the shoulder about for a long time. And maybe, Father, our generosity is connected to something else that we haven't even really talked about this morning. But we're aware of it because it's something that you have brought to our hearts and minds yet again. Father, whatever the case is, whatever it is that we are wrestling with, whatever it is that we are wishing would kind of come to an end because it's been hard for us. Speak to our hearts this morning. May you invite us to live with greater courage, lives of generosity, that we may surrender more and more and more of ourselves to you, that you might call us and invite us to live lives of great generosity. Father, you are very capable of this, so we leave it in your very wonderful, gentle, beautiful hands. Call us by name. Draw us close. In Jesus' name, amen.